Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today is the last full day of the Trump administration. Hours before President-elect Joe Biden takes the oath on January 20th at noon, Donald Trump plans to board Air Force One for the last time as president and head to Mar-a-Lago, where he'll spend his post-presidency days, at least 6 months and one day a year. He'll be the first president since Andrew Johnson to be absent from his successor's inauguration. And so President Trump will go back to being Citizen Trump. But we know Citizen Trump. Citizen Trump is Businessman Trump. Back in 2017, he promised to keep his presidency separate from his businesses, which he would turn over to his adult children. Yet he tried to hold the G7 meeting at his club in Doral, Florida. The State Department did hold events at Mar-a-Lago that paid a $1,000 bar tab out of White House coffers after the State Department balked the receipts. Foreign diplomats stayed at his hotels. He would often remind us all that he was a businessman first, even at the oddest times, including at a press conference about the white supremacist rallies in Charlottesville back in 2018, where he took a moment to extol one of his ventures.
I own a house in Charlottesville.
Will you go to
Does anyone know I own a house in Charlottesville?
Where is it?
Oh, boy. It's going to be... It's in Charlottesville, you'll see.
Is it near the winery or something?
It is the winery. I mean, I know a lot about Charlottesville. Charlottesville is a great place that's been very badly hurt over the last couple of days. I own actually one of the largest wineries in the United States. It's in Charlottesville.
Actually, that winery has been in his son Eric's name since 2012, but you can hear the president talking about a business that his son runs on paper as though it were his. But things have changed for the name Trump. As Mr. Trump prepares to leave office, his brand has been hurt by the violent insurrection he stirred up against Congress on January 6th. The team at Trump Inc. has been on the Trump business beat for years. And now joining us on this last day of his presidency are WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, Allison.
And co-host Ilya Marez. Hi, Ilya.
Hey, Allison.
The end of the Trump administration also means the end of Trump Inc. tears. Your last official episode dropped today. Andrea, this final episode is a time capsule of sorts of the past 4 years. What were you talking about when you were trying to figure out how to wrap up Trump Inc.?
Yeah, so let me just sort of dwell on the moment that 24 hours from now, there will be a new president, which is really something. The last 4 years have felt like 400 for sure. The time capsule was really the brilliant idea of reporter Meg Cramer, who felt that we should put together a collection of objects that would tell the people of 2031, what it was like in the Trump era. So this is not an archive. It's not meant to be comprehensive. It's just 8 objects that we think are a signal to people of the future how crazy, norm-breaking, and sometimes law-breaking this administration was. So that is the idea behind the time capsule. And I think, Meg and Ilya, I think you two together came up with the idea of recording it in Donald J. Trump State Park, which is a would-be golf course that became a tax break and now is a what's called a passive state park, which means it's kind of a forlorn kind of a place north of New York City.
Yeah, and you take kind of a, you know, you take a field trip to this park and you hold sort of a vigil in a way for what has happened and what has occurred. When you thought about what should be in the time capsule, what did you think should be in it?
Well, we're spoiled for choice because everything Trump does is a simulacrum of Trumpism writ large. And we debated and discussed for a really long time, should we, for example, put in the sheets of the stacks of what we think were blank paper? If you remember back to early January, when 4 years ago, when Trump was announcing his ethics plan, and he was with his lawyer, Sherry Dillon, and it was a table piled high with blank paper and an ethics plan that was, in the end, not worth a great deal because it didn't fully divorce Donald Trump from his business. It said he could continue to draw income from his business while he was in office. So we debated and we discussed, and what I think we came up with is 8 objects that are each a little bit distinct. Each one has a slightly different lesson. So I'll tell you about my object is one of the more arcane ones. When I traveled to Ukraine about a year and a quarter ago, it was just as the whistleblower complaint had sort of gone public, and I visited the palace of the former strongman president there, Viktor Yanukovych, this like outrageous, enormous sort of monument to kleptocracy. They actually call it a museum of corruption. And I see that place as a place that's tremendously significant for Trump and Trumpism because it's really a monument to secret flows of money, that we don't know the source of the money that built that palace. And similarly, Donald Trump is someone who always took advantage of LLCs and shell companies and secret flows of money. And now he's on the point of successfully ending a presidency without ever releasing his tax returns. So, you know, Trump has been very good for journalists because there is so much to discuss here.
Andrew, what is his actual standing with his brand and the businesses attached at this point?
Yeah, it's bad. It is definitely bad. What has happened since 1/6 is that people who even stuck with him through Charlottesville, and you played that tape at the top of the show, which is crazy. I mean, we know what was going on at Charlottesville. We know Trump was saying there are very fine people on both sides. And also he took the time to promote his family winery during this incredible moment of national trauma. And after Charlottesville, a number of people said, that's it for me. I'm done with Trump. But a lot of people stuck with him. And what's sort of amazing in the fallout in the last couple of weeks is you really realize how very many people, how very many prominent businesses did stick with bank. I mean, there are his bankers, Deutsche Bank, Signature Bank, that no longer want to work with him anymore, which is very significant since he has hundreds of millions of dollars of debt coming due beginning in 2023. And what would happen with a normal businessman was that the bankers would just refinance it. And now Trump seriously has a problem with refinancing. There are the New York real estate firm Cushman & Wakefield, or the real estate firm that has a very prominent role in New York real estate. There is, I think, most cutting to Trump of all, the Professional Golf Association said it would no longer hold its 2022 championship at Trump's National Golf Course in Bedminster. So, I mean, we all know that Trump has had many disasters. In 1990, I think that was the most parallel time to this one, which was when he had $800 million of debt that he had personally guaranteed on his casinos in Atlantic City, and he couldn't pay back the banks, and they lost hundreds of millions of dollars, and after that, no major U.S. bank would do business with him. But what's different now is that Trump, so many people know what happened on 1/6, and there isn't a banker in the world that doesn't understand that if they lend money to Donald Trump, he will not pay them back, and he will not pay them back in a timely fashion. And that goes for lawyers, and that goes for almost any other business associate you can think of. So Trump has a much smaller group of potential people to work with. And that is a big problem for him going forward, considering his financial debts and his legal situation beginning almost immediately once he gets to Mar-a-Lago tomorrow.
Let's talk about people with whom he's worked, because it's a theme of the administration. Donald Trump was going to do what he wanted to do, but he needed people to help him do what he wanted to do. I want to play a clip of Mick Mulvaney defending his decision to hold the meeting of the leaders from the world's economic superpowers, the G7 summit, at Mr. Trump's club at Doral. Here is Mick Mulvaney.
It became apparent at the end of that process that Doral was by far and away far and away the best physical facility for this meeting. In fact, I was talking to one of the advance teams when they came back, and I said, what was it like? And he said, Mick, you're not going to believe this, but it's almost like they built this facility to host this type of event. If any of you have been there, you know that there's separate buildings with their own rooms separate and apart from each building, so that one country could have a building, another country could have another, you folks could have your building for the press, and obviously the common areas are going to be perfect for our needs down there. Again, anticipating your questions, how is this not an emoluments violation? How is the president going to profit from this? I think the president has pretty much made it very clear since he's got here that he doesn't profit from being here. He has no interest in profit from being here. It's one of the reasons that he's not taken a salary since he's been here, has given that salary to charity. Will not be profiting here.
Ilya, how many Pinocchios does that get? Five being the biggest nose you've ever seen.
You know, he did put, if that had gone through, I think Mick Mulvaney is correct that the president was going to do it at cost, or at least that's what they claimed that they were going to do. But that highlights a different problem with this administration, which is that President Trump didn't draw his $400,000 a year salary from the American taxpayers. Instead, he continued to profit from his business. So the last 4 years, he hasn't made money from the taxpayers, at least not through a salary. Instead, he's made money through his business. Now, part of that money came from the taxpayers because the State Department and Secret Service and many other agencies were forced to spend lots of money at Mar-a-Lago and Bedminster and places like that. But I love that clip, Allison, of Mick Mulvaney, because it was almost the most incredible moment of just sort of through the looking glass that I experienced. I remember watching it. It was right after the whistleblower complaint with Ukraine, and Mulvaney was really trying to put out two separate fires. One was all of the questions about leveraging foreign policy to influence a U.S. election, and he told the reporters in the room, get used to it, essentially, this kind of thing happens, big deal. And by the way, we're going to hold this summit at President Trump's resort, which, even if he doesn't profit from the brand promotion of having all the world leaders there, is absolutely phenomenal for, you know, a golf course out by the airport in Miami. Think about it.
My guests are Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Marritz, the co-hosts of Trump Inc. The Last podcast is dropping today. It's just it's great. It sounds great. It's a great adventure you take us on. I want to talk about the Trump children. And I say children, they're not little innocent kids. Ivanka's 39, Don Jr.'s 43, Eric's 37. They're grown humans. In the final episode, there's a scene where Donald Trump Jr. goes to India. Andrea, what was he trying to accomplish there? And what was his spin on being there?
Yeah, this was this was actually when we were putting together our very first episode of Trump Inc. So we started Trump Inc. a year into Trump's presidency. So it was just about exactly 3 years ago. And we were trying to figure out, how are we going to open the show? And a journalist we had been working with, Anjali Kamat, who'd been reporting on Trump's business in India for a year, sent us this WhatsApp message about these newspaper ads that said, Trump has arrived, have you? And Don Jr. was in India selling condos to we don't know who, and anybody that put down a $40,000 deposit could get a dinner with a man named Donald J. Trump. Now, what is the significance of this? Well, a couple of things. One is that Ivanka Trump, his sister, who still, like her father, was profiting from the Trump Organization while she was at the White House, had just had a big state visit to India. There had been days and days of media coverage. She had been with Prime Minister Modi. So there had been this big kind of endorsement of the Trump brand writ broadly when Ivanka Trump went, which Donald Trump Jr. followed up with a visit to sell condos. Now, we don't know who was spending those $40,000, and it was just emblematic of the ways the White House could be used for the profit of the Trump family and also the mystery surrounding it. People could pay Donald Trump $25,000, $40,000, and they could just show up and then not actually buy a condo. So it could just be somebody wanting to influence the president secretly. And this is the sort of essential problem of the Trump administration, was people could pay the president in a million ways. They could buy a condo, they could join a golf club, they could book a night at a hotel, they could have a banquet at the Trump International Hotel. President Volodymyr Zelensky made a point of telling Donald Trump, when in that infamous phone call, that's the president of Ukraine, that he had stayed in one of Trump's hotels. It soon became clear that if you wanted to influence the American president and perhaps American policy, you had to pay Donald Trump personally. And that's what those newspaper ads meant to us, was that this was a global signal. Literally, you want to play, you need to pay.
And you have to hear Donald Trump Jr. speaking about it to understand his spin, the way he is putting this forth, the way the Trump clan is putting this forth. Let's take a listen to Donald Trump Jr. talking about real estate deals from his trip to India.
You're offering a dinner date with yourself to all your new buyers.
Well, but if I didn't, I'd be the first person in the history of real estate to not go meet with their buyers, right? So, but that's the problem. Because my father happens to be in politics, there's always a catch. It must be because of this. It's like, wait a minute, I'm functioning as a real estate developer. That's what we do. Now, we do have the luxury of being a brand and being out there, but we've been a brand for 30 years.
Yeah.
We've been a known entity that way for a long time. I mean, I was I keynoted speeches here at real estate conferences when I was in my early 30s, probably when I knew a lot less about real estate than I do today. Mm. I was able to do that, and we hadn't even thought about politics then.
Okay.
But again, there becomes sort of a narrative where it's very easy to say, well, this is only because of this, which really discounts the work that my father and then, you know, myself and my siblings did, you know, building the company certainly as an international brand over the last few decades.
Ilya, what do the Trump children's futures look like after their father leaves the White House?
Boy, Allison, I just have to say, isn't that like the most fun piece of tape? One of the real joys of making Trump Inc. for me was digging up news clips from other places that people might not necessarily know. You know, like to me, it was just so eye-opening to see how Don Jr.'s trip to India played. In India at the time, that was 2018. It was a very different Don Jr. He was clean shaven. He had his hair slicked back. He really looked much more the picture of a real estate or maybe finance guy rather than sort of a social media phenom that he became. It's interesting with their future. I presume you're talking about the three eldest kids who are really the ones who have a hand in his business. And they've taken different paths. Eric, as far as we know, is the one who has sort of stuck with the business side of things the most, although he hasn't stayed out of politics. Don Jr., on the other hand, really created a career for himself as a public speaker, as a very fiery, sort of angry public speaker, kind of very much on the MAGA end of things. He wrote some books. The books became bestsellers thanks in part to the Republican Party making bulk orders of those books. But you sort of watched him find himself in real time over the course of the presidency. Whereas Ivanka Trump was in the White House as an unpaid presidential advisor and had a much more sort of anodyne presence for the most part, was involved in a bunch of like women's initiatives and economic development initiatives. But just in the past few months, as the climate really got ugly in the country, it's been interesting to watch her social media kind of mirror that a little bit and start to talk about Democrats in kind of an angry way, because that's really sort of not the persona that she has cultivated until this point. So she's going to Florida. From what I've read, Don Jr. may also be going to Florida. It seems like that might be more hospitable terrain for them. But I'm very curious to know, what is your next act when you have such a famous name and such a controversial brand?
Yeah, I mean, Allison, if I could just jump in, I think it's not just that they have the same last name, but that they propped it up. And I think, I mean, there was this infamous video that a lot of people saw that Don Jr. made right before the rally, the infamous rally on 1/6, where he's sort of goofing around. And there is Ivanka Trump standing right next to her father, Donald Trump, right before he goes out and says what we now know he said. And it's that they, I mean, I think especially Ivanka Trump acted as if she could have it both ways, if she could sort of get the whole kind of MAGA crowd, American patriots, she called them in a tweet that she subsequently deleted, and also sort of proclaim herself as a champion of women and families and micro development for women across the globe. But that has become increasingly difficult as Donald Trump, her father, has just pushed things way over the edge. So I think both her political brand and her business brand is very, very difficult. I mean, certainly she cannot go back to just sort of breezily selling handbags and strappy high heels, which is one of the major endowments, you know, some of the major things she was doing before she entered the White House.
My guests are Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Marritz, co-hosts of Trump Inc. Looking back, this is a question for both of you. Is there something or anything that you covered that you would cover differently now, knowing what you know now? Ilya, you want to start?
Andrea, do you want to start?
I don't know that I would cover it differently, but I feel like I would have loved to have more time to really understand what it is that Rudy Giuliani was doing. I mean, he was completely living in plain sight in the last 4 years, mm-hmm. but there are so many questions about how he was making his money, who was paying him. We know that he was at some point investigated for possibly being a target of Russian intelligence while he was also working for the president of the United States. So I don't know that we could have done it differently, but I would love to sort of have been able to clone myself or do what Hermione Granger did and live each day three times so that I could really, really understand that. I think that is a lingering mystery. And if Rudy Giuliani is not pardoned today, we may learn more about that, possibly, if the investigation in the Southern District of New York regarding Rudy Giuliani ever results in charges.
Ilya,
I don't know that I'd do anything differently exactly, but the stunning thing for me, the thing that I'm really left with in going into this sort of summing up place and putting out our last episode, is that Trump never released his tax returns. He broke a decades-long precedent. He didn't release his tax returns. We didn't even really get to find out what his businesses are. You know, in his official government financial disclosure, he lists 500 or more business entities that he's involved with. Most of them are mysteries. Most of them are absolute black boxes. And it's incredible to me that we passed 4 years with this monumental conflict of interest, and Congress was unable to get those records and do its oversight job in a timely fashion. And what little we know mostly comes from leaks and press reports and Donald Trump's niece and a very scattered sort of information pattern. And it's the best that we can do. And now the task is going to fall more to authors and historians to examine the historical record.
So what's next for both of you?
Well, there's going to be a long legal hangover here.
Legal hangover. There are so many legal cases, beginning with the Manhattan District Attorney's case, which is now known as the Trump v. Vance case, because Trump has successfully brought the case to the Supreme Court twice. That may end tomorrow or soon, and it may be that the Manhattan DA finally gets Donald Trump's tax returns for his investigation. There could potentially be an indictment in that area, and that actually also could involve, I mean, from what we know from public records, Trump, his business associates, his children, and or his business. So all of that, I think, will shed some light. And that is a pardon-proof investigation. The New York Attorney General is investigating. The Fulton County prosecutors are looking into that phone calls Trump made to election officials in Georgia. The U.S. Attorney in Washington is investigating the insurrection. And, of course, all of that doesn't involve the impeachment trial. So, and then also there are there is any number of civil suits. I mean, Ilya mentioned Donald Trump's niece, Mary Trump, has a civil suit. E. Jean Carroll, the former advice columnist, has a civil suit. Michael Cohen has a civil suit. There are so many civil suits that could yield information about Trump's business. So we are going to be keeping an eye on all of this. Our mission in Trump Inc. was to track the ongoing conflicts of interest that are presented by a president who can actively profit from his business. That ends tomorrow, and so thus does Trump Inc. in its current form. But we will be watching the fallout, and we encourage people to not only listen to the final episode, but to stay subscribed, because whatever we do next, we will be announcing on the podcast feed.
Andrew Bernstein and Ilya Marritz, Trump Inc.'s co-hosts. Thanks for all the work you do.
Thank you so
Allison,
much, Alex.
So much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.